As the kids say, 6 minutes, Dougie Fresh, and you're on.
I didn't know this was an intertemporal podcast where you're talking from the 1980s and I'm here today.
From Topic Studios and WarnerMedia Podcast Network, this is Politically Reactive.
Previously on Politically Reactive, when the shit just got to the fans.
Pari knows this about me. I cannot look at things that are wrong and not want to fix them. And
that is correct. I remember when you made sure I changed my wardrobe after you hired me.
Because keep it real, like I said earlier, a lot of folks are reaching for whiteness, reaching for power, reaching for that ultimate sense of value and fulfillment and success. So that's how I think, you know, we have to not be co-opted by that. We all recognize the problem, but a lot of us still want to play that game because it's the only game in town, and we have to get a new game.
Reaching for whiteness. Wow, that's. I feel like every time I'm going to be like, I want some ice cream. Wait a minute. Am I reaching for whiteness?
But you just said previously that you were having sex multiple times a day, but none of it was good?
That was when I was really young, and I wasn't writing books like a maniac.
Right, right.
You know, I was thinking sex was more important than writing.
Right, right. I've never had that issue.
I hate being told not to be angry because anger is an appropriate response to so much of the injustice that marginalized people face. If you're not angry, then you're not paying attention. Something is really missing if you're not angry.
It's my fault? Fuck you. Yeah. Fuck you. Go watch Bill Maher, fucker.
Oh, yeah.
The one thing, you talk a lot about economics. You talk a lot about black banking.
Yeah.
So I would imagine, but the thing about...
Not on my records, though. Not on my records, I talk about shooting poodles and robbing rich people and kidnapping fat moms from Jazzercise.
And I tell you a Butler question, like, what's your post-apocalyptic skill? You know, and people say, like, super, like, obtuse stuff. Like, I'm a healer. And I'm like, I don't know if I want
you
in my cadre.
Do you have a degree from the Harvard Medical School of Healing?
Even then, if you do, I don't want you in my cadre unless you can tell us what plants not to eat. So anyway, mine was, I was like, I'm going to be a pilot.
It's funny. That is an important thing. What is your post-apocalyptic skill?
We don't have any, dude.
I know. You feel like, I'll be the funny guy. Nope.
Nope. Never been that guy.
Nope. Sense of humor doesn't actually not need it at that moment.
No, no.
Do you know which crops to plant when? That's what you need to know.
People later are like, oh, remember how they were funny.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, they were also delicious.
All right, Hari, we're back. Let's talk about Politically Reactive, and let's talk about why we left and why we came back.
Well, we're back because people wouldn't leave us alone. At every show we did, every time we were in public, at some point, someone would say, when is the podcast coming back? Which, after 2 or 3 years, you would think, like, they made it sound as if, oh, it's been off like a couple of months. When's it coming back? When it was like 2 years in, I'm like, you're still asking this?
Yeah.
You still assume that it's going to come back? That's like go ahead.
No, I would get like messages on Twitter or even live. Like, I would like people would be like, you know, I'd be like, yeah, United Shades season 5 is premiering. People are like, I like United Shades, but I really miss Politically Reactive. Like, they would be like, I'm fine with this. I mean, if you need to do this, that's fine. But the thing I really want is the podcast.
Oh, my Netflix special's out. Oh, that's so cool. So when is this podcast coming back? the free podcast you used to do? When is that coming back?
Yeah, I feel like this. I only felt the need to come back because fans and supporters of the podcast kept reminding us that they wanted to come back. I thought eventually, like you said, that those messages would tail off. But I think, let's be honest, the state, if the country had, you know, if we had had a different president, like if it was President Hillary Clinton, maybe people wouldn't be so excited for the podcast to come back. Not that supporters of Politically Reactive are like 100% with Hillary Clinton. I'm not trying to say that. But I am saying that, like, I think the political moment has something to do with people needing needing some outlets like this podcast.
They want to laugh. They want to laugh. They want to be informed. They want to feel hopeful. And I, you know, our podcast, like, it's kind of amazing the life it's had since we stopped it 3 years ago. Like, I've met high school teachers and college professors, people who've assigned, you know, whether it's the gerrymandering episode or, you know, a number of other, you know, the Robert Reich episode, like, they've assigned our podcast as something to listen to prepare for a lesson or to reinforce, you know, what they're teaching. And that's kind of incredible. Like, that was certainly not what we intended when this thing came out. And the fact that, like, oh my God, like we've been become a resource in addition mm-hmm. to being maybe something that's cathartic and something that makes people laugh and gives them a break. Like, it's taken on a meaning that I guess I didn't expect, you know? So, I mean, it almost feels like, you know, maybe this is a bit of a, you know, an overstatement, but perhaps we are a public institution.
It's funny, as soon as you said maybe this is a bit of an overstatement, I was like, oh, it's definitely going to be an overstatement. But then you said public institution. I was like, oh, I expected it to be even more overstatement than that. But
so, we're like the public library.
We are like the public, yes. yeah. Except we're more accessible at this point. But yeah, I think that, like, I mean, it's funny to think it's been 3 years. It doesn't feel like it's been 3 years. Actually, I just did a panel about Lenny Bruce recently, and on the panel was Luke Kirby, who plays Lenny Bruce on Mrs. Maisel's show. I always want to say the fabulous, the marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and I like that show. It's about stand-up, and also his Lenny Bruce is incredible. And I was like, oh, and part of the reason I decided to do this panel is because I get to talk to Luke Kirby and meet him. And I was like, this guy's great. He's a great actor, and he's playing Lenny Bruce. It's weird. It's so good. And I set up on the Zoom, and I click in, and I see him, and I'm about to say something. He goes, Kamau, I just want to say I'm happy that Politically Reactive is coming back.
Oh, boy.
And he was like, he said, I just assumed you guys had a falling out. I'm glad to know you've mended the rift. So I think, and I had to say this to several people that, yeah, we haven't had a falling out. We did have a falling out, but that was years before the podcast.
Many years before,
the rift has been mended for probably 10 years now. But, yeah. But yeah, I think people thought, I would say to people all the time, no, we're still friends. We're still talking. And so I would say this, to be clear, it is only back because people who are listening to this now, who are excited it's back, wouldn't let us forget about it.
That's correct.
Well, let's talk about this. When we last recorded Politically Reactive and it stumbled to its conclusion, you were a very different person back then.
Yeah, I was a single man who wanted to have children one day, but didn't really have a plan to make that happen. I had no partner. I had that was the main one. I had no partner.
I was going to say, yeah.
I was looking for other things, but it's a small list of issues.
Yeah, it's a small. I mean, you need somebody who wants to have children with you is the main thing on that to-do list.
And since then, I met somebody wonderful who, coincidentally enough, was a fan of the podcast, regularly listened to our podcast, and despite that, still liked me. And, you know, certainly whatever little bit of, like, oh my God, it's Hari Kondabolu, that's long gone. I think ended after the first time we spoke. And she's incredible and funny and smart, and her name is Jocelyn, and we have a little baby now.
You say this like it's all sort of like just what happens. reality, having lived through this with you, that's not my experience of you as a guy who is like, she's pregnant, she's really pregnant, there's a baby coming. It's, we know what the baby is. The baby's like, you've really settled into being just like the a dad. Just like, now we have a kid.
At this point, it's like, I'm tired. I don't want to. It's like, you don't even have you don't even have the bandwidth to be overly analytical. You don't have the bandwidth to, you know, there are moments where I try to think about, oh my God, like a month ago, 5 years ago, and then the baby starts crying, and then you're like, I'll pick this up later. Mm-hmm. I'll pick up this introspection when I have time.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Just to coordinate this session, it required my partner to be free to stay at, because we're in San Diego right now. This is where we had the baby.
This is the thing. You moved to San Diego. The guy who was a Seattle, Brooklyn, Queens guy has relocated to San Diego. Nobody saw that coming.
Temporarily.
You say temporarily. You have relocated.
Mid-November, we're back in New York. Mid-November.
You say that, but you're not going to move in the middle of the chaos after the election.
We are.
Relocated permanently to Darn San Diego.
Look, the fact my kid is San Diegan hurts. All right, let's start. Like, he was born a San Diegan. That already requires a degree of reprogramming.
I mean, like, you understand that for the rest of your life, let's say you guys move back to Brooklyn. I don't believe you will. Or Seattle, will. Which I don't believe that. But let's say you move back in your fantasy world. You move out of San Diego. Then that kid is going to be a kid who is raised in Brooklyn.
Correct.
And is like a 30-year-old. And when that weird question comes up, oh, which hospital in Brooklyn were you born in? And he goes, I wasn't born in Brooklyn. Oh, then you were born in one of the Queens hospitals, clearly, because that's how we do it here. And he's going to say what?
I was born at Scripps Hospital in San Diego. Specifically La Jolla.
Oh, not even San
Diego.
You don't even have
Look,
that.
Look, this was certainly something that was contested many months ago before we made the decision to come to San Diego. But at the end of the look, it seemed her family's here. It's quieter. There's more room to walk around. There's a lot of different reasons / justifications for being here.
Spoken like a parent. It's quiet here. I have a backyard. these are things that parents love. Quiet and back and green space.
Yeah, I'm sending him to a private school, but I support public schools. I really support public schools.
I mean, you've just described me at this point.
Oh, my God. Gee, sorry.
I do really support public.
I was actually describing me in about 5 or 6 years. I was imagining my future. Yeah.
Yeah, but so here's the thing. I mean, it's so you, in the time that we were since we left, you took a 3-year hiatus to find your partner and have a baby. To participate in the having of a baby. I want to be clear. I'm not the guy who's saying that you had a baby.
That makes it sound like I intentionally chose to take a little sabbatical to...
Come on, I can't do politically reactive anymore because I need to focus on me.
I have to focus on finding someone. And it required 3 years nonstop of dating and finding my partner.
Did you use an Indian matchmaker?
No. No. God, that show. That show, my God, I'm glad we're getting to that because we didn't get to it before. It's like shows the worst. Like, people are going to think that's what it's like. Like, it's slightly better than people thinking, oh, so you were, arranged at birth to marry somebody else you didn't meet. It's like, no. It's more like this more shallow system, actually, that requires where wealth and looks and everything else are the most important steps, and it requires a very gossipy, superficial, older Indian woman to make anything work. Love only happens on her watch. horrifying. And again, it's like if the rest of the world judged American marriage solely on The Bachelor or on Love Island or Jersey Shore. That's what relationships look like, and they would be kind of right. But it's like the most superficial of that was like the worst, I think, of what love and marriage looks like in India.
So now that we're back, what are we going to do with the show now? What do we do with this vital and necessary, I'm not going to say essential yet, but maybe public institution?
We need to overturn the government.
Okay, fair enough. let me put that in my Google Doc. Overturn the government. Okay.
I mean, we need to obviously we both watch a lot of news, and I think the thing that we've always provided is, you know, this isn't quote unquote objective, let's show both sides. This is a radical podcast. The point of this is to talk about movements, mass political movements, social justice, and you know, the people doing the work. And I think that, you know, for all this talk, you know, the election's about, you know, Biden's a centrist and, you know, we can stop, you know, he's a tourniquet, it'll stop the bleeding. You know, we're still about what is the long term. Can we save this planet? Can we create racial and social and gender justice? Can we create a world that, you know, that our children can live in? And that to me isn't about the election. That to me isn't just about Biden and Trump. That's a bigger vision. And I think that's kind of what we're going to do. We're going to talk about the election, but in the context of, hey, things weren't great even when Obama was president. things were significantly better. Yeah. But, like, the issues were still there, and some of these things are institutional. Like, police brutality was there when Obama was president. The difference is he knew how to speak about it in a way that made us feel like there was a possibility of hope, that the person understood the problems in the country. But the institutional changes that have to be made were still necessary back then. So, like, to me, you know, this is a moment, you know, regardless of what happens with the election, where we need to start, you know, if Trump gets reelected, what do we need to do to try to, like, continue this this defense? And if Biden gets elected, how do we hold him accountable? Because he's certainly, like, the idea that we're just going to kind of get back to where we were before Trump, we don't have time for that.
Well, we don't. Also, I don't think we should have interest in before Trump. Like, I think that we're aiming too low if we're just trying to get back to before Trump. I think that, you know, it's what you say, we're going to save the world. The way I think about this, certainly saving the world. But I think first it's like, are we going to save America? Because I think that, like, you know, I say this to my daughters all the time. Like I said, I have three daughters now. Sammy's 9, Juno's 5, and Asha's 2. And I say this to Sammy and Juno all the time, like, just to be clear, like, because they're not in school right now. They're remote learning, which, to be clear about this, shout out to every teacher who has to figure out how to teach through computers. Shout out to every administrator who's trying to figure out how to, like, keep things together. Every school administrator at every school, public, private. The only people who are probably, even the homeschool parents are having a hard time, because despite how it's told, homeschooling actually usually happens, a lot of it happens out in the world at museums and public institutions, not, you know, like politically reactive, but outside three-dimensional public institutions. So everybody who's doing school is having a hard time during this pandemic. And so my kids, not fans of remote schooling, as I wouldn't really want them to be if they were, I think it was weird, but they're really having a hard time with it. And I sort of say to them sometimes, like, just to be clear, because they think they're sort of thinking the world is having this experience. I'm like, just to be clear, this is America that is doing a bad job with COVID. Other countries are struggling with it or dealing with it. But like I just posted an article yesterday on Twitter, New Zealand's almost back to regular, or, you know, like they're, you know, was it South Korea had started at the same rate we did and immediately, like, was like, nope, we're not doing that. we would like people not to die needlessly. You know, Vietnam is doing well with it. Like, had a spike at one point of 16 cases and they shut stuff down. 16 cases. It was either 16 cases or 16 deaths. But either way, it was like, we ain't had 16 nothings in quite a long time. So it's like, I think that, like, I want my kids to understand. I think it's important for us to understand that, like, America hyper-focuses us on America, but which makes us think sometimes that America's the world. And really, right now, America has very much separated itself from the world. And Trump's a big part of that. But it's also local leadership. Like, I feel like here in California, we started to do a good job with the pandemic. And then suddenly, I think a lot of Orange County and a lot of the red parts of California bowed up against Gavin Newsom. And now we're not any better than the rest of the country right now. Not significantly better. So I can't just put it all on Trump, but I do think that, like, Trump is certainly the tip of the imbecile spear.
Well, it also, I mean, the discussions about masks, for example, they kind of echo the climate change discussion, right? Like, it's the distrust in science. It's the idea of civil liberties, or what people perceive as, like, their rights. Like, I have the right to not wear a mask. Mm-hmm. I have the right to drive an SUV. I have the right to put a fork in the toaster and see what happens. It's like, this isn't about rights. It's about consequences.
Yes,
it's about what happens when you do this, and a distrust in science, which predates all this. Like, you know, Trump certainly is exploited, but there's a lot of people, whether it was Trump or not, they didn't want to wear masks. They don't believe that's going to do anything. And certainly it's hard when you hear people say, well, there's studies that, you know, show that masks aren't useful. Like, some of those studies say that masks on their own are not going to solve the problem. Masks, as long as everyone is wearing masks and there's social distancing and people are washing their hands, that seems to have worked in rest of the world. And I feel like people are like, well, it's not going to work. Then what was South Korea doing then? Like, what were they doing?
Trust South Korea's numbers? I mean, how can we trust them? I signed up for Facebook again, so I've been reading some things.
I mean, 200,000 people died, but how do we know they're not actors? how do we know? Alex Jones says they're all actors. Do you know why they're not actors? Because how could you get work again if your last role was playing someone who died? You know what I mean? If everyone thinks you died, it's like, what was the last thing you did? Well, I was in Sandy Hook, and then I was part of the whole coronavirus conspiracy. But I would love to get on this episode of Law & Order SVU. Like, you can't get acting work after that. There are no actors.
There's no jobs available. It says here that you died during the coronavirus false flag.
Right. I am one of the country's leading tragedy actors. I have... died in many different American tragedies.
You know, I think of people talk about how bad 2020 is. Well, right now we're in the midst of, like, you know, people are like, I can't wait to get to 2021. And I'm like, well, 2020 might actually get a sequel.
Yeah. So, like,
2020 might get extended for a second season.
That's so, the other thing. Viruses don't have the same linear conception of time.
No. So I think really it's about, like, do we have the stomach and appetite to completely, the question is being asked as far as I can tell, to completely deconstruct and rebuild fundamental institutions in this country.
Yeah.
And certainly if we elect Biden, he's like, you know, that's not going to be his role, but it will be like, a little bit of a brief respite from what we're dealing with Trump, and then but the battle continues no matter who wins on election day. And even if this thing that I'm clear about, if Biden wins, it I believe Trump goes away. I think he goes the way of Glenn Beck. He's going to start some sort of, like, quote unquote TV network that he's going to charge $5 a month, and he's going to very quickly find out people aren't that interested in him if he's charging a monthly fee. And you can't do rallies in basketball arenas and football stadiums and fill them up if you're charging for them when you're Donald Trump. Once he has to charge tickets to those things, it's not going to be full. So, but all these people are all his base are around, and all those people don't go away if Biden wins. And so, right. I think things are going to get potentially even scarier or more frantic and hectic if Biden and Harris win. So therefore, it becomes clear, like, we have to have a stomach for fundamental change, or you know, America becomes, like, I keep saying this, like, remember the Roman Empire? I don't. Like, you know what I mean? Right. Like, you know, I hear Mesopotamia was pretty cool. Alexander was great over some stuff. The sun sets on the British Empire every day. So,
and they were around a lot longer than this, yes, country. This is only a couple of 250, yeah, years or something like that. Like, this,
yeah, in
is
the
not
span of world history, if this country won't end in any sort of, but it will end being the superpower, the leader of the world, the empire. You know, the way that when we were a kid, Russia sort of ended in that. You know, there. So I think that's the question: do we have the stomach for that? Because that's a long haul fight. Yeah. That's not a November fight.
Well, we see, like, American democracy isn't as rock solid as we thought it was, because if Donald Trump can get elected, commit all the crimes he's committed, and not be held accountable, because everything was kind of a handshake agreement. Like, nah, no one's going to ever do that.
No,
like,
there was no.
There is respect for the office. There's respect for the system, right? I mean, even right now, like, with Ruth Bader Ginsburg dying, and the Republicans are actually going to try to get a Supreme Court justice in, despite not letting Obama pick because it's lame duck. I mean, it's only 1 year left. Well, yeah, 1 year is a lot of time. It's only 1 year left. Well, it's about less than 2 months from the election. Yeah, but we don't give a shit. Like, they don't play by the rules. But the fact that, like, we don't see the fundamental damage this is going to cause, how can you call yourself conservative and then allow for such drastic, unprecedented change?
Absolutely. And full disclosure, I'm actually a part of this organization called Take Back the Court. This is something that's happened since Politically Reactive was here before. I was recommended to this group by Nato Green. Take Back the Court is about court expansion, about adding more justices to the court. Because, you know, if they do pass another Supreme Court justice while Trump's in office, then there will be 6 conservative justices and 3 less than conservative, like, somewhat 3 more liberal justices.
If we expand the court, though, doesn't that just mean that the Republicans will do the same once they get?
Well, I think the idea is to expand the court and then during a Democrat reign, put 3 more liberal justices on the court. That's the idea.
Right, but then once the Republicans have it back and they want, wouldn't they want to expand the court to add three more conservatives to again take the lead?
Yeah, and then we'll add three more.
Right, that's what I'm saying. That's my that's my concern. Like, how is this going to go? And also, it will take for at that point you're well past a committee. Like, it's going to take forever to make any decision. And I also think it leads to more corrupt. That's too many people to keep track of. I just feel like that.
Well, I having said that, I should bring we should bring somebody from Take Back the Court on Politically Reactive.
Absolutely, 100%.
That's the thing. This era of America with the pandemic has been so. Like, we've been re-looking at lots of things and institutions. I mean, you know, Ellen DeGeneres has been looked at in a new way. Hamilton, the play Hamilton, has been looked at in a new way. Yeah. I just thought about that with the founding fathers. Like, I think, like, sort of, the Hamilton wasn't canceled, but the discussion around, like, wait, should we be celebrating any of these people?
No.
I think we have to really sort of give up on the idea of, like, whatever the people who founded this country intended. It's we get to decide what the country is.
Yes.
And so whatever the founding fathers or whoever built this country intended, we also know they weren't thinking about people of color. Well, they were thinking about black people, but really not as people. They weren't thinking about women. And we have to sort of go, okay, the whole we can't keep building on that system.
We don't treat anything as sacred as we've treated American democracy in terms of trying, it takes forever to fundamentally change anything. Technology changes, fashion changes, you know, who, like there's such fundamental things that are different than 250 years ago, but we're so precious about what these slaveholders wanted and what they envisioned. And, you know, some of what they envisioned ends up, you know, working out, seems to have some functions, but a lot of what they imagined makes no sense now. Because it wasn't meant for everyone to vote. It was meant for people like them to vote. And there was slavery. And the country was much smaller. Like, and it was all it was the fucking 1700s. That's why Antonin Scalia it was batshit. Because he thought everything should be. He was a strict constitutionalist. It's like, no, we should do exactly what this person intended 250 years ago. And it's like, I don't think they had watches back then. Like, did they? You have a phone in your pocket. What are you talking about? Clarence Thomas would not be next to you. You would not be buddy-buddy with him. Like, what are you talking about?
That makes me want to go, did they have watches? I feel like they might have had watches. They had watches with gears. I'm not trying to be that did guy, Harry, but I feel like in 1700s, can somebody Google if there were pocket watches in the 1700s?
They might have pocket watches. I'm talking about wrist watches.
Okay.
I'm not talking about watches with fobs, which, by the way, if that went back in style in a heartbeat, oh, my God, yes. I would love, like a little, like a train conductor. Absolutely. Yeah. Nice. Absolutely, I would do that. Who's going to stop me? I'm a daddy now. I can do whatever I want.
I'm a daddy now.
I can be as lame as I want, wear whatever I want. Okay. What are you going to say?
Hurry, I know you're new to being a parent. We have to be clear. If you say I'm a daddy, that is if you say I'm a daddy, that is very different than saying I'm a father.
Oh, yeah, that's a
just
good.
You can be both. You can be a daddy and a father.
Right, right.
Your kid can call you daddy, but if you, a grown man, say I'm a daddy, that's not exactly the same as saying
that's a good point.
I'm a father, or you can say I'm a dad, but I'm a daddy feels.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Well, I think the big note here is if you enjoy what we just talked about. We're back.
Yeah.
If you didn't enjoy what we just talked about, then why are you here? We won't see you again. But Politically Reactive is back because many of you demanded it. We want to hear from you now that we're back. You can email us at info@politicallyreactive.com. Please let your friends know. Tell them to subscribe or resubscribe, as the case may be. You can also do a new review on iTunes. All that stuff helps, wherever you get your podcasts, review us, rate us, thumbs up us, 5 stars, however you want to do it. Politically Reactive is back. We got big plans. We're booking big guests. We would love suggestions as always. We're turning the machine over, seeing if it starts. Welcome back, everybody.
Yeah. So, yeah, man, we're doing it. I'm excited. Right. And just, again, a warning to those who are listening, if you don't get other people to listen and the numbers aren't good, we're never coming back.
Jesus. Wow.
This is a warning. Like, the numbers were good last time, but this is cut and dry.
Oh.
If you aren't listening, we're not coming back.
Politically Reactive from Topic Studios and Warner Media Podcast Network.
Executive producers are Maria Zuckerman and Christy Gressman.
And my pal, W. Kamau Bell.
And my pal, Hari Kondabolu.
The show is produced by Matt Martin and Malachi Seegers-Sakir. Will Stanton engineers and mixes the show.
I'm big on not raising the kid who's like, what's a Barbie? I just can't raise that kid. That's my own thing. I feel like if the big movie's out, I want my kid to at least know the big movie's out. I don't want my kid to be like,
Peanut butter and jelly. You mean almond butter and cherry jelly, right?
Yes. And avocado jelly, yeah.
Is that what you mean?
When you work next level. When you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii.